Welcome, our fellow lovers of love, and thank you for joining us on yet another excursion through the stream of consciousness down the river of tranquility to fill the lake of life with love.
Good evening, our fellow lovers out there, and thank you for joining us on this, late version of Late Night Love. It's a really late version of Late Night Love. We were scheduled for last week, but anyway, we move on. It was tiring. It was a long week last week. So
sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. We had a good week this week, though. We got to take a drive and play Santa Claus on Wednesday, so that was nice. It was a nice day for a drive.
Yeah, we went up to visit my youngest daughter, my oldest granddaughter, and we took her Christmas advent calendar presents.
So we got to go off and play Santa. So, okay, so let's see what we got. In this episode of Late Night Love, we answer some of the most intriguing and controversial questions from Reddit. Well, at least according to Lovey. Yes. From cheating spouses and co-sleeping toddlers, low sex drive, to fandom fantasies. All right, we tackle all this kind of stuff with our honest and candid, but family-friendly opinions, which is kind of the trick here. And so let's find out how that how this journey down the Reddit rabbit hole, I can say that, goes. All right. So what are we going to start with?
We're going to start with relationships.
All right. Relationship questions. Okay. What you got for me?
Okay. I, 26 male, have been venting my relationship issues to an AI. And my girlfriend, 25 female, lost it when she found out. How do I deal with this?
Well, didn't we answer this question? A couple of weeks ago. All right. But anyway, you deal with this as you should deal with any relationship issues. You deal with openly, honestly. And at this point, the AI is essentially acting as your counselor. Now, whether that's a good idea or not is a question, but you have every right to have someone to discuss your relationship issues with or without. And if you need to explain yourself, hey, this way, no one else in your friend circles, it's about as safe as you can get. The only people who know is you and the AI algorithm. So they don't, and that doesn't care. So my suspicion is that she feels that maybe you're not communicating with her about the potential relationship issues, and so she's feeling a little hurt. And so if my suspicions where her emotions are coming from, right, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
Why are you talking to a computer and you're not talking to me?
But of course her reaction to finding out could be why you're talking to a computer and then not talking to her, because she overreacts to things and he's trying to figure out how to deal with it. Mm. These things are self-fulfilling. And so anyway, you just have to deal with it openly and honestly. And you may find out that maybe you guys aren't meant for a long-term relationship. Your needs don't actually match. You don't feel each other's needs properly. And maybe sometimes it's just like that. Or this is an opportunity for growth in your relationship and it can go stronger from here. You don't know. This is one of those forks in the road and you will find out what your relationship is or isn't pretty soon, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
All right. How do I, male 29, convince my wife, female 28, I'm still attracted to her even though she gained 20 pounds?
Women don't understand that if a man loves you, he doesn't actually care about, the thing. But it's not that she doesn't feel attractive is the issue you have to deal with. It's not that she doesn't feel that she doesn't think you find her attractive, because at the same time, she'll be complaining that she can't keep her hands off her. So, but she's not feeling attractive because she's gained 20 pounds. And no amount of reinforcing her that you still find her attractive is going to deal with her issue that she doesn't feel attractive. And either she's going to have to come to terms with her new body type, you know, after a couple kids or whatever, your body type changes, you know, kids and age, and you're talking late 20s, early 30s, you know.
Yep.
That's about the time where that can happen, you know, or she's feeling guilty for not doing more about it. And as a man, all you can do is reinforce that you love her. And that's not a part of your, you know, it's all you can do. Because the more you try to reinforce that, you know, you still find her attractive, it ends up, in a strange way, it ends up reinforcing the idea that she's not attractive. It becomes you try too hard. And so it's a strange, it's a difficult line to walk. So I don't envy you on this path, but the best you can do is create the conditions where she feels loved and supported so she can deal with this however she needs to deal with it, by either exercising more, or loved and supported enough where she can accept a new body shape. Because it's not really about you finding her attractive. She doesn't find herself attractive. And you can't do anything about that other than love and support her. That's all you can do. Whatever she needs. If she needs help, you know, organizing a diet, then help organizing a diet. If she needs a workout buddy, then, you know, try to be a workout buddy. It's not all of us are good at that, but, you know, you know, if the effort is paying for her gym membership, then pay for her gym membership. Whatever it is you can do to support her, you know, if it's driving her to the gym and picking her up so she feels safe as she's coming and going, then do that. You know, whatever it is you can do to support her journey that she's going to go on here fairly soon, you know, is what you can do to help that. Because it's not really about how you view her. It's about how she's viewing herself. And she's transposing that onto you until she can feel to deal with it. Am I pretty close?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because I gained quite a bit of weight, and it was almost like you didn't notice.
You don't. I mean, it's not that you don't notice, but you don't notice. Men don't notice. Once the man loves you, it's the rose-colored glasses thing. It's, you know, you just see the woman you love. You don't see anything else. I mean, you're not oblivious, but you just, it's not that you don't care. It's that you love the person, not the body shape.
Well, you told me you were concerned about my health.
Yeah.
But
you were starting to have trouble walking down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. That becomes a problem. You know?
I could walk two blocks. I had to stop and rest.
But look at you now. Look at the journey you went on.
I walk for about an hour every day.
And all I had to do was support you on your journey. I didn't judge any part of your journey. It's just, what do you need from me? And, you know, That's what we do.
Well, you even offered to go to the gym with me when I was starting out, not when I was still in my uncomfortable phase.
Yeah, once you offer
sedentary phase.
You offer these things when it feels appropriate. And if you know your wife, and you do, and be confident that you do, you know when those moments are. Just be supportive when she needs your support. And you know what? That's what she needs. That's called love. So you'll be all right. You'll be all right. Okay.
Okay. My female 34 husband, male 35, cheated because he had the opportunity to do so. What does it even mean?
It means
not out of attraction or unfulfilled needs, just the opportunity, he claims.
That's actually worse.
He thought he wasn't gonna get caught, is what happened.
That just makes it, that's actually worse, right?
I know. It's like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, that's worse. So I rarely actually say this, go file for divorce. That one's not even there's nothing, no answer to that other than, you know, go get your P's and Q's in order, dot your I's, cross your T's, and move on. He's not invested. And he's no longer if he ever was emotionally invested in the relationship, and there's no way to fix that mindset. so don't even try. Don't waste your time. Move on. As sad as it might be, you know, hey, there may be other issues involved, and maybe that's not the immediate solution, but let's not, don't fool ourselves. That's not a healthy relationship. It never is going to be. It's just not. He'll do it again. It's exactly what he's telling you. Next time he has an opportunity, he'll do it again. And guess what? If he wants to create an opportunity, he will. So, sorry. Okay, what's next?
I, 27 male, was at my aunt's funeral the other day, and my girlfriend, 26 female, yelled at me for not responding to her messages more. Was I not wrong for not responding to her more?
No.
No?
No. Did she... You know, the thing is, if those genders were reversed, we'd find all kinds of red flags in that behavior, controlling behavior, blah, blah, blah. And so that's what that is. That's just controlling behavior. Or she's insanely insecure, which leads to controlling behavior. So I'd be very, very careful moving forward in your relationship to make sure that, you know, she's working on herself, because that's an inappropriate response. Unless, you know, it's just an inappropriate response. I can't actually think of any time that's an inappropriate response, unless she's having some kind of an emergency. But, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a red flag that she has some work to do on herself, at the least. How's that? Okay.
How much is too little sex? 28 male, 28 female. Okay, everything is perfect about the relationship, he says. Uh-huh. But they have sex like once a month.
Well, there's no such... How much sex is too much or not enough is entirely dependent upon each individual relationships. And sometimes during stages of your relationships, right? In an early stage, when you're in your early 20s, you've got no kids, you end up having more sex than you do when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and you've got all kinds of stress and schedules and aching bones and medical conditions and all, you know, pills that make you drowsy, all kinds of goofy things that we have as you do that happen as you get older. So there is no direct answer to this. The question is, if you're asking the question, you should be having a discussion, not on Reddit, with your spouse.
Yeah.
And, but when you approach this question, you have to approach it very tactfully. You can't be, these are one of these things where a lot of the times, you know, it's okay to have very blunt discussions, but when you talk about whether you're having too little bad of sex, people take it personally because it's very personal. And so you cannot in any shape, manner, or form make it feel like you're judging or attacking the other person because of it. Right. Talk about it as I, this is where you need I statements, you know, and maybe someone's dealing with depression. Maybe there's some underlying issues and you're not dealing with them because they're hiding. You know, no one likes to talk about depression. It's a, you know, factor of depression when you're not dealing with it. So I would softly discuss it. And maybe it's one of those discussions you have after you have sex. Hey, we should do this more often. You know?
That's a soft sell.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have, don't make it a thing. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't turn it into a thing. It's something to discuss, but not everything that you discuss has to become a thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So just don't make it into a thing. That's my suggestion. Okay.
All right. Okay. I, 25, female 25, got blocked by a male friend, 26, after he met my boyfriend, 29. Why?
My guess is you had friend zoned him and didn't realize it. Now, friend zone is not a male friend that's, He is in the past has expressed interest in it. You've probably rejected him, but insanely softly, and then kind of continued on a relationship that unknowingly left hints that there might be a chance. And now he's met your boyfriend, and he's realized that there is no chance. And so he's moving on, as he should. If he's actually romantically interested in you and you are taken, he should move on. And if he can't deal with that relationship, you know, don't force it. It's not meant to be. Or he's been burned in the past and he's afraid that that's what you're going to do. And so he's cutting bait before he gets hurt. It could actually go either way. Mm. Doesn't have to actually be the first one. It could be he's experienced this before and he just doesn't want to take the chance because it hurts a lot.
Yeah.
So without details, but without specific details, it's something along those lines. He's either afraid of getting friend zoned or he realized that you have access, and you probably didn't realize it. This happens far less often. And remember, let's be careful. Friend zone isn't about, it's when you kind of take advantage of that relationship. And oftentimes it happens accidentally because, you know, men are dumb and don't take these subtle clues that you leave and pick up on the ones they want to. Oh, she still wants to hang out with me, so there's a chance. Yeah, she still wants to hang out with me, there's a chance. She still takes my presents, so there's a chance. You know, she still goes on the trips with me, so there's a chance. And then she dumps on him about relationship issues. And so you're actually leading on in an accidental way by being a friend. You're accidentally leading him on by not repeatedly being clear. And likelihood he's not very, you know, sophisticated, relationship sophisticated. He's a 26-year-old man. Most of them aren't. So, or he's been hurt. It goes that way. And this is his lesson learned, and now he'll... But that's what you can, that's exactly what a man should do if he has romantic feelings for you and now he realizes you have a boyfriend and it's not going to happen. He should block you and move on. He should tell you, but that's the functionally, that's what should happen. Again, you go back up. Why run the risk of something in the future happening? He doesn't want to cause any problems in your life, but he wants his own peace of mind. And So he doesn't get hurt, he's moving on. Accept it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually not about you. He's protecting his emotions. When, you know, all that other stuff we talked about, fundamentally, he's protecting his emotions. And you can't blame somebody for that. Man, woman, child, elderly, you can't blame anybody for that. Okay, what's next?
All right. 33 male cheated on by my 29 female. A month before our wedding, how do I cope?
Is that a cold feet thing, or is she sabotaging the relationship so she doesn't have to? Is she a drinker? And without, how do you cope? Fundamentally, I suspect you call off the wedding, you move on, unless there's some explanation that you can accept, which maybe there is, you know. Maybe she's a bit more open sexually than you realized, and you have to find some way to accept that. Or not, you know, you and her maybe realize you're not meant for a long-term relationship, except the fact that you got out before you made it permanent, and, you know, move on. It's going to hurt for 6 months, 18 months, somewhere in there. Yeah, you deal with it the same way everybody else does. You just one day at a time, one step at a time. And next thing you know, you're on to something else. It'll always be part of you, but it's, you know,
maybe yeah.
It gets shoved up into the back of the closet, proverbial thing, and you know, is what it is. Just takes up space. Okay.
All right. A strange sister, 27 female, trying to reach out to me, 20 female, right around Thanksgiving. Not sure if I should respond to her for the sake of the holidays.
Well,
she's a drinker.
Is she on her path of recovery? Or
she's trying, yeah.
If she is honestly trying, you should probably respond. Doesn't mean you have to do very much, but you should honor her effort. And at least say, you know, hope you have a good Thanksgiving. Hope you, you know, give her the best wishes. Why would you not? As long as she's trying. if she's giving an honest effort, and I know it can be hard because a lot of times drinkers and you know, addicts of any kind really can burn a lot of bridges. But she's your sister. You know?
I'm very thankful my sister.
Doesn't mean you have to let her into your...
She protected herself, but she didn't reject me.
Yeah, you don't have to let her into your house. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to let her into your daily life. But is she's making an honest effort? Maybe, you know, wishing her a happy Thanksgiving and letting her know that there's hope. You know, just think of what might happen if you didn't, or if you don't reach out to her for the holidays. You know, maybe she's feeling a little more lonely than she otherwise would. And maybe she reaches for the bottle to cure that. So maybe you're reaching out can help her, can save her. You just don't never know. But you don't have to let her back into your daily lives, right? That's, you know, you get to protect your own, as we said, you do get to protect your own emotions.
Yes.
But she's your sister. You know, you don't have to sacrifice anything, but she's your sister. And if she's honestly trying, it's the right thing to do. Okay. But, you know, barring unknown circumstances, right? There's always those unknown circumstances that, you know, would change that equation. So, all right.
We're moving on to parenting.
Ah, parenting. This is going to be better. Okay.
What is an acceptable way to ask a parent to control their children? That's between 2 and 4.
2 and 4? Yeah. Well, has this person been a parent of children before 2 and 4? And what's the circumstances? Because maybe you're being unreasonable. Right? Without knowing the circumstances of the situation.
They didn't give much explanation.
Yeah. Without knowing the circumstances, it's very possible that you're being unreasonable. You know? Now, if it's in like in a restaurant and kids are running around and I don't know. Sometimes you're having children that are have difficulty sitting still for whatever reason. And as long as they're not being, shall we say, disruptive to others, you should probably leave them alone, not say anything. Now, if they're actively causing you, you know, if they're kicking the back of your chair or something like that, you know, you could probably say something as politely as possible. Politely as you can think of at the moment. I can't think of anything at the moment, but I'm usually better at these things. I don't know what you got for this one.
Well, I would be specific.
Yeah, because you can't just say control your children, because what the hell does that even mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to have to, if they're kicking the back of your chair, you know, you could actually just, maybe they just don't see it. Maybe they're got another child and it's kind of out of sight. You know, some it happens sometimes, right? And so maybe you just mentioned that they're kicking your chair and you could move the chair a little bit so it's out of your reach. You know, there's all kinds of
Be specific.
Yeah, and this whole question needs to be more specific because it really depends on the circumstances.
Okay.
Because the person could be saying I've had people complain because children are outside playing in their yard, right? And so, you know, children, you should just mind your own business. You know, it's, you know, you're at a park. Children scream in a park. Leave them alone. Yeah, that kind of thing. You know, if you're in a fancy restaurant, it's got different standards than if you're at a park or community center or something, right?
Yes.
Yeah, or even a museum. And if you're at a fancy restaurant, you ask your waiter. You don't do it yourself. So there's that. All right. What we got next?
Am I a bad parent? Sleeping in till 8:30 on weekends.
Well, what? Are you sleeping in while your children are wrecking the house and running up and down the street naked or something? Is there?
No. They taught their 6-year-old that she can get up and play in her room until they wake up.
That's what every parent since the dawn of time has done. So, no. You're fine. Yeah. Every parent at the dawn of time has taught their children to occupy themselves while they, you know, It's gotten easier as time has gone on. It must have been hard back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nowadays you can, you know, I guess go play with your tablet or your toys for quietly for your toys. You know, a little 7 or 8, they can pour themselves a bowl of cereal. You can even eat. That's what gives you another half hour, 45 minutes. It'd be 9:30. So look for those days. You're fine. You're fine. Every parent has done that, you know. So, yeah, no, that's perfectly normal. All right, what's next?
How has pregnancy changed your body forever?
Well, I can't answer that. That's when I got fatter, but that sympathetic thing. But
stretch marks, the hips widen a little bit. I had some belly. I got a little bit of belly fat that just has never left.
So, yeah. There you go. And
it's just, you know, you could talk to your doctor about minimizing if, I mean, you're going to have to work out, you know, and under the guidance of your doctor.
I put on, you know, sympathetic pregnancy weight that never went off, but that's the whole different thing. I don't think that's what they're asking. So, not my question. But it does, you know, but your body changes anyway. So it is what it is. Yeah. Okay. What's next?
How do you deal with the constant asking for stuff?
Learn to say no.
It's that simple.
It really is. It's learn to say no. And then they become more judicious in what they ask for. That's how they learn that skill. But they can't learn it if you don't teach them and you teach them by saying no. I know it went for a little while that you're not supposed to tell your kids no. And I always thought that was the craziest dang parenting advice that I'd ever heard. You shouldn't tell your kids no. No, those little devils need to be taught no sometimes. You know, sometimes you tell them no just because you haven't heard no in a while, you know. Sometimes I would. I'd have to tell one of my kids, you know what? No, you've had too many yeses recently, so you get a no this time. Not that I'm opposed to it. You just get a no this time because too many things have been going your way. I have done that as a parent. I've had to say yes to you. It's just because it's getting out of balance from the other kids, but it wasn't their fault. But, you know, mm-hmm. They just they knew what to ask for and when better than other children. And so, you know, they'll take advantage of that if you let them. And when you have limited resources, you have to be judicious with your yeses. And so sometimes you have to tell them no, not because you need to leave room for someone else's yes. And, you know, in a family, that's how these things go. And, you know, they all learn. It's okay. We're human beings. We learn to say no. Dealing with no's is actually a good skill. Learning to deal with no. Because guess what? In your adult life, you're going to be told no a heck of a lot. So it is what it is. All right. What is next?
Do you find it socially degrading to put a toddler in a leash harness?
No.
It's not.
No, I can understand the reaction some might have. While I do understand that, I can get it. How can the visual can lead some who are, you know, ultra sensitive about human rights issues from history, could find that degrading. But it's not the same thing. We have to learn to separate the stuff from the stuff. And, you know, keeping a toddler who's overly active and tends to try to run away, you know, connected to you while you're dealing, so you can deal with, you know, your 6 and 7 year old at the same time, is not the same thing. So is it degrading? No. It means that they're using whatever tools available to properly parent their child, and you should leave them alone. How's that? Right?
Absolutely.
It's just a tool. They will take that. Trust me, you don't want this child leashed to you forever. They take that leash goes off as minute as that child can deal with that leash not being on.
Yes.
So no one's leaving that leash on any longer than it has to be. So it's a safety thing. They know their children, and so leave them be.
That's, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's next?
All right. Toddler coffee cups. Okay. This toddler, this family drinks coffee.
Uh-huh.
The whole family.
Yeah.
Even the older kids.
Okay.
And this toddler wants his coffee.
Okay.
And she puts milk with some coffee in it.
So it's instead of some milk with your coffee, you put some coffee with your milk. But yeah, coffee is a traditional drink in many places, in many cultures. And it doesn't surprise me that that's a thing.
And she's wondering if it's wrong or not.
No, you should probably be careful about how much caffeine you're pumping into your toddler. But I mean, if you're having a cup of coffee with the rest of your family and you're teaching them the tradition it's a cultural tradition. Leave them alone. Let them be. Let the cultural tradition be. It's fine. You're not pumping coffee. It's not like you're giving them three cups of black coffee. You're introducing them into the tradition of having a cup of coffee with family and whatnot. Leave them be. That's, again, it's fine. You know, there's a difference. Separate the stuff from the stuff. This is perfectly fine. You know, a couple drops of coffee with your milk is not the same thing as, you know, a cup of black roasted.
With a shot of espresso.
With a shot of espresso. If you're concerned about it, use decaf. That would be my only real concern, would be the caffeine. And my guess is there's not enough for it to be an actual concern. So, or you're going to actually create a resilience to caffeine. And so it won't be, you know, pretty soon it won't mean nothing. So, yeah, it's a cultural thing.
It's a cultural thing.
It's a cultural thing. It's fine.
Okay. I
mean, do be careful about over caffeinating them. This would be my only concern at all. That's it. So.
Okay. How can we transition our 2-year-old away from co-sleeping?
Oh, each 2-year-old is different as you transition them away from sleeping. So you're just going to have to find the one that your child responds to. Some prefer to sleep on the floor next to you for a little while, and then they move to their bed. You know, some will move to their bed for half a night, and then they'll come in and sleep with you, and you let them do that for a while, and eventually, you'll find the thing that works for your child. Some of it is you kind of have to make sure they go to bed first in their own bed before you go to bed. You know, you will find your path. You just have to, whatever it is, once you find that path that works, you have to stick to it.
Don't switch it up.
Yeah. So, but this is, again, this is where you get to learn your child. You get to learn their habits, their wants, and their needs and desires. They kind of tell you these things if you pay close enough attention. Yeah. Will he go to sleep in his own bed during the day? You know, will he actually nap in his own bed? So we'll make it so he's used to sleeping there.
Yeah.
You know, start small, start with baby steps. Start with sleeping on the floor, on a, you know, blanket on the floor or something. We actually had we kept the bassinet and then the cribs in the bed next to us until they were what, 2, and then so they were always used to sleeping. Part, at least for part of the time. So it wasn't such a big transition, but that happened, you know, at a year. So something like that. I don't remember exactly the time frames, but so yeah, just take it slow. You'll figure out your way.
It's going to take a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, it will likely take a while. Some children take to it like a fish to water, right? Some kids sleep right in the bed. They never have any problem.
None of mine.
Others have a heck of a time dealing with it. You know, some kids get excited about it, right? And the only thing they'd have is they wake up in the middle of the night and they get scared. And so then they come to you. And that's kind of the only issue that some of those kids have, right? Others, they have a hard time falling asleep because they're used to sleeping with mom and dad. And you know, now you have to break the habit. Okay.
Okay. Bedtime for 6-year-old. Okay. This poor little thing has to be in school at 8:30.
Why the heck are we sending 6-year-olds to school at 8:30? Unless, you know, you have to because of the parent schedule. Why the heck are we doing this? I don't understand. But that's a whole different question. Again, the things they tell you, like the average amount of sleep, and a six-year-old probably needs, what, 10 hours of sleep, the average. But not all six-year-olds need 10 hours. Some need 8. Some need 12. you know, and those are kind of the extreme sides of it. Most somewhere in between those. You know, and that's how you get with the average of 10. So learn your child and just literally you just backtrack from the time you have to get up. If your child needs 10 hours and you have to get up at 7:30 to have enough time, you back up 10 hours from 7:30. Then however long his get to bed process is, you know, tack that on and there you got your bedtime. You know, probably 9 o'clock. He needs to be sleeping, right?
Yeah. He's used to being a bit of a night owl.
And guess what? He's a natural night owl. You're going to be fighting this fight forever. But there's one thing I have learned about natural night owls. They need less sleep than others. They just do. Night owls, generally speaking, need less sleep than others. So, or they're used to operating on less sleep than others. Maybe that's a... you know, they're chicken and the egg type of thing there. But yeah, so you're going to be fighting that fight. So just try to get him to his bed as early as you can and pray. Because if he's a natural night owl, you're going to be having this, he's going to be having this battle with the schedules from the rest of the world for the rest of his life. And there's nothing, you know. You can train him to train himself to go to bed, but he's still going to revert the minute he can revert back to that night owl schedule. But you got an opportunity to train him, I suppose.
Well, he will eventually, but it seems like 6 is awful tender age to be having to do this.
No, 6 is when you have to do it. If you don't do it now, you're just never going to do it.
Oh.
No, so if you're going to train him to go to bed, and train him to, you know, have his bedtime routine. But I mean, so what? If you got to have him to bed by 9, that means you have to have him done with dinner by 6. Right? So you can give him a quick bed night snack at 8:30, 8:40, and off to bed. So you can have a nice, strict bed. That's the problem with it. If you're going to train him, you've got to train him now. Now, whether that's a good or a bad thing, open for debate and discussions. Not our place here. But if you're going to do it, now's the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We're going to move on to work questions.
Oh, my favorite.
Okay. How to deal with the loss of respect for a current manager after finding out personal information about them?
Well, you don't need respect to do your job. You just do your job. It's not relevant. And quite frankly, you probably shouldn't have found out that personal information about it. So now you're in a worse position of you have to pretend you don't know anything when you do. And so, but here's the thing. People's personal life are none of your business. It has nothing to do with your...
With your work.
With your work. It just doesn't. Now, may it mean you don't want to go hang out with them to have a beer or go play mini golf with them after work or go hang out with them, sit at his table during the social functions or that, you know, or that lunch or whatever. Yeah. You don't have to do any of that. That's perfectly acceptable. You don't have to have a personal relationship for him, but you know, your job is your job. So now you get to learn how to be professional. That's you get to practice being professional. So look at it as you're building a new skill. Congratulations. Okay.
Handling a workplace where you don't really fit in?
You look for one that you do. That's the only real solution. I mean, if you're in a situation where you have to, or it's the only good job in the small town you have or something, well, you learn to conform. You know, you learn to put on your proverbial costume when you go into work and you take the costume off when you leave. You become a performer. And that's sad. It's draining. But that's why you want to find another job, because that's the only way to get through that is you end up becoming a performer. You know, you become an actor every day and get your job done. And it's difficult, especially if you want to find meaning from your work, because you're never going to find it. But if you just need a paycheck, sometimes you got to do what you got to do for a while. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how you do it. You put on your costume every day, and think of it that way. Put on your costume and you go off and you play a character. You're playing the professional Jane Doe, you know, accountant Jane Doe. You sit down there, you put your head down, you do your work, you go home, you take off your accounting clothes, and you put on your rock star party girl clothes, whatever the heck it is. And, you know, or your grandma slippers. I don't care what it is. It's you, you know, you become your real self on your off time. And millions of people have to, you know, have to do that every day. You're not alone. Just put it that way. You're not alone. But my suggestion is to build your skills so you can find some place where you don't have to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Is it unprofessional to use up my remaining personal time off for the year?
No.
It's a use it or lose it situation.
Then you use it. Yeah. Now, maybe the thing is, and I know what happens, right? It's because I do this kind of thing, is you just kind of don't think about it. And next thing you know, you're at your lose it situation. And, oh, crap, I'm actually kind of here. I've got however many paid time off days to take off before whenever the hell my pay time, whenever the heck that accumulates. I forget what it is. So yeah, I'm going to have to take some few days off here myself. And you just take them off. It's not unprofessional. You know, those are paid time off days. Those are called a benefit that come with your job. Those are a benefit. You say, hey, along with all this other stuff, along with your pay and your health care or your dental care or whatever else they do or don't give you, we're going to give you these paid time off days. So, you know, if you want to take a vacation, go down to, you know, go to Vegas and play at the casinos, or, you know, maybe your grandma has a funeral. You need to go take a few days off. You take the paid time off days so it doesn't hurt you economically. You know, whatever you need to use it for. That's what they exist for. It's part of your compensation package. Use them. Otherwise, otherwise it's a donation to the company, which is fine. If you work for a nonprofit or something and you want to give back, you help your nonprofit budget. Okay. I can just accept it that that's what it is. I'd take the days off and then give them the cash. But if you really wanted to do that, but yeah. It's not unprofessional in any stretch of the imagination. And if your workplace treats it like it's unprofessional, you should find a different workplace, you know, eventually. That just should be your start of your journey for that. Okay, what's next?
Is it normal to be compensated extra for travel?
Oh, depending upon what you mean by extra. You know, you get like per diems in some places you do, some places you don't. You know, you get traveled for, you know, mileage, or they pay for your, I mean, you don't have to pay for the expenses of traveling. Now, whether they pay you like a per diem or whatnot, normally they'll pay for maybe one or two dinners if you're traveling, depending, you know, $20 a day, or, well, that's what it was when it was in the 90s. So
really?
Yeah, it was $20 a day for meals back in the 90s. And so who knows what the hell it is now, but every place is different, but. You know, normally you get compensated a bit extra unless travel is part of your normal job, like a traveling salesman type of thing. And then, no, it's because they've got the compensation package is always structured in a way where you're compensated for that. So, but if travel is a not normal part of your job, then yeah, they'll normally throw you something for your troubles. Okay.
My work expects tasks to be done ASAP, even though there is a set deadline. Is this normal?
Yes, because they don't want the work to come up to the deadline and have a change or something be wrong. And so they want you to do it as soon as possible so they can do this thing called quality assurance. And they can run through all the checks and get any changes done that need to get changed. So, yeah, it's completely normal. It's completely normal for your tasks to be not sit on your desk until the last minute. Just do them. What are you afraid of? They're going to give you more work. They're going to fill that time anyway. So you're there. You might as well do your work. It's perfectly normal. Where do these people come from? This person must be in their 20s, right? It's got to be one of those people who just haven't really had an experience.
Yes.
I should everybody should work on an assembly line one day. I just even if it's just for a week, you know, or a day, just to have to work on an assembly line where the day doesn't stop. It never stops. Just you should have to do it. But yes, it's perfectly normal. And if you were a boss, you would expect the same thing. Because you want to see it, you don't want to have to do these things at the last minute. Okay.
Is it appropriate to ask for more pay when given additional tasks outside of job description?
Yes. It's appropriate. Now, whether they give it to you or not, or they reconfigure your job so you're essentially doing less of other tasks. And so, you know, that's generally what will happen. It'll just reconfigure your job. So you're doing less of other tasks and more of those tasks, but your same output is essentially the same. Now, if you stepped outside of your, again, if now you're supervising or something, that's a different story. But, you know, jobs change over time, right? So the fact that you get new tasks added and old tasks taken away, or old tasks get retired more likely, is perfectly common. There's nothing. You know, now if you're asked to be a salesman when before you weren't, that's a different discussion, right? Because now you've changed completely. So it really kind of depends. But yes, it's always appropriate to ask for more pay if you feel like they're asking more effort from you or more responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, if they're asking the same amount of effort and the same amount of responsibility, it's just different set of tasks, then no. You know, it may be, you know, based upon your ability to do them efficiently, but hey, I'm really good. You're giving me, I'm so good at my job that you're giving me extra tasks to do. I think I have earned a pay raise. That's a legitimate discussion. You know, if you're so good at your job that you have an extra couple hours a week so they could add you a couple more tasks, then that's a little bit discussion. Yeah. I'm more productive than everybody else. I should make more money than everybody else. Yes. Correct. So yes, it's always appropriate to ask for more pay. Whether you get it or not is an open discussion. But you know, but also jobs reconfigure. And just because your job gets reconfigured doesn't mean you necessarily have earned a pay raise. You know, maybe your job got reconfigured because you're not very good at it and they have to and they're giving you other things that are less critical. You know?
Yes.
There's other ways that can go. So okay, what's next?
How anonymous are Workday's peak on surveys sent by management to employees? It's a certain type of survey used in Europe.
How anonymous? My guess is nothing's anonymous. But if it's in some of these questions in Europe, they have really tough standards for tracking and reporting and whatnot. But the second part of that standards for tracking and reporting means they have to be able to do all this tracking and reporting to report to the government, which means that your anonymous stuff likely still isn't anonymous. But also don't worry about it too much. Just do what everybody else does on these surveys that are BS lie. just answer, give them the answers that you want to give them. Either lie to the extremes, lie to what they think you want to hear, tell them the truth. You know, it doesn't matter. These work days, pecan surveys, whatever, they're fundamentally useless because everybody's just going to lie. So how's that? Those kind of surveys are dumb.
They really are.
They don't really work because you don't know who's going to, and you don't know who's lied who's, you know, massaging their, because humans are weird. Even when they take surveys that, you know, are allegedly anonymous, they give answers that they think people want to hear rather than their own genuine feelings. It's just a human trait. But I also wouldn't worry about it. Of all the data and anonymous things that's floating around in the world, that's probably the least bound up things to worry about. So, you know, and I'm libertarians and we think all kinds of conspiracies. That's just one that wouldn't touch my radar considering everything else I have to worry about. Okay, so what's next?
Okay, how to cope with a low sex drive spouse. We're moving on to sex.
We actually missed this one.
Oh, wait a minute. How much sex time usage is too much?
When it becomes a problem for the other people having to do too much of your job. Right. Because been doing anything wacky over there. Because look, if you get sick, if you're legitimately sick and you have to go and you're off a little while, just, you know, it's fine. But if you're calling in sick routinely because you know, you've got a headache one day and your cat's sick the next, and it's not so much the problem. The problem is you're putting stress on your other employees.
Yes.
That's the real problem with the sick days. It's not so much that your job, it's other people have to compensate. And so you're putting added stress and it's not fair to the other people. But then again, if you're legitimately sick and you have to go take time off to go deal with your doctor's appointments and whatnot, you go take time off to deal with your doctor's appointment and you don't worry about it. So just be mindful of your usage and don't worry about if it's too much or not, because if you're being legitimate with it. Now, your boss may feel differently than that, but for me, it's just be mindful. And, you know, use it as you would like someone to use it on you. If you were an employer and you had an employee, how would you like them to use it? Think of it that way. You know, you want people to be able to go to the doctors. If someone's legitimately sick, has the flu, you want them to stay home. You don't want them coming to the office to spread it around. Okay, so those are legitimate cases to use it. But if you're using it because your cat passed away and you're, you know, emotionally distraught for 3 days, well, you know, they may understand the day, but, you know, three. Yeah, it just is what it is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What we got this next? Ooh, we have comments over here, by the way. It's Justin. Yep, clock. So, hey, Justin, how you doing? All right. So what do we got next?
Okay, we got sex questions.
Oh, sex questions, which are the same as relationship questions oftentimes. Okay, so what do we got?
Okay, well, actually, we already kind of handled this one.
Okay, so, all right, let's go next one then.
Okay, how could a virgin last longer in this first time?
He can't, but the good thing about most virgins is they're young and they're ready to go again in 5 minutes, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be my suggestion. Don't worry about it. At that point, it's not the point. You don't want to put pressure on someone during their first time. Just let them experience the experience. You know, orgasm is not the goal, right? He can have another one. You know, you're not having many 60-year-old virgins who are going to take 2 hours before they can get the next one going. So it's not impossible, but it's not going to happen all that often. So, yeah. So that's my suggestion. Just don't worry too much about it. Just relax. Let it be. Let be what will be. And I'll be good.
It really will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry too much about it. Okay.
Okay. Does one ever get used to rough sex?
Well, only if they like it.
Well, she likes it, but her body is kind of.
Okay. Well, then it means you're over. Then you're overdoing what your body can. Then it means she's overdoing what her body can handle. You dial it back a hair. That's what your body's telling you. Dial it back a little bit. All right. She's enjoying herself, but her body can't take it. But guess what that means? It's just like if you're a long distance runner, but your knee keeps giving out. Guess what? You're not really a long distance runner. So if your body is giving out, you're going to have to dial it back a little bit, find different types of play and, you know, expand your horizons to something that's less difficult for your body to deal with. It's my suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because, yeah, you're not a long distance runner. How's that? Okay. As much as you may want to be, you're not one. So find a different sport, or, you know, so you can still play. Just find a different sport. All right. What's next?
How much can sex play a role in the health of a relationship?
This is an interesting question, because in the beginnings of a relationship, sex can play a very big role in developing bonds and creating those emotional connections. But as relationships age, sex becomes less and less important, especially if you're good at all the rest of your relationships, because you don't need that chemical connection, because you've developed the emotional connection and you feed that emotional connection during the rest of your during the rest of your relationship. So how much can it play? It can play a huge role, but as your relationship develops, it plays less and less, is mine. Doesn't have to, but as you get older, sex should play less and less of a major role in your life. Simply biology. It's simple biology. We're evolved that way. You're young and horny, so you reproduce, and then you become a stable human being so you can raise your children, and then you become the wise elder so you can give advice to those horny kids that are still coming up. That's called the cycle of life. It's how it's worked for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years. Why is it going to change now? Sorry, it's just how it's worked. You can go back and read the scripts in ancient Egypt, and it's the same discussions. There's nothing new under the sun. It's the same. Just saying. Don't shoot the messenger, man. I'm just the messenger. All right, what's next?
How do I, female 19, end an affair with my professor? Well, she did it to boost her grade, and now she's kind of feeling guilty because he's married.
You think? Don't have affairs with your professors. How's that one? Let's. Okay, how do you untangle it? You just do. You just pull the plug. On the bright side, he's married, so it's very easy to pull the plug.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if there is a bright side on this, because he's married, it makes it very easy to pull the plug. You literally can just walk away. Right? Semester's over, never take his class again, walk away. That's it. If it gives you any grief, you actually have recourse with the university. But you are not innocent in this here relationship, so I would just walk away. But if he does give you grief over it, you do have recourse with the university, because that is way unprofessional for him. But I would just take your lesson learned and walk away. It's my suggestion. Say it's not working, walk away. If he takes it out on your grades, you do have recourse, but walk away. Just walk away. You know, got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. All right. So what's next?
Okay. What's thin dom, but not as BDSM? Well, that's called femdom.
Yes.
It's called femdom. Okay. And they want your money. That's what they're there for.
Yes. It is part of the BDSM.
Well, you have femme dom. Dom A is in the word. They're dom A.
Yes.
But if you're looking like for a softer version, you just want to be the, passive in a relationship.
Yeah, but it still fits under, it's not, they're confused. They want a dominant female in the relationship, in their sexual relationship, but they don't want the overly aggressive type, shall we say.
Well, I thought they were looking more for in the relationship, but they want vanilla sex.
Well, no, because otherwise you'd say that. They're talking about their sex life.
Oh.
They just want a soft, they still want a dominant woman. They just want it softer because they've got this distorted view of what BDSM is. They think BDSM is whips and chains and tying things up, which it can be, but it includes a whole wide range of things. So it's much attitude and, you know, aggressive speaking. You can literally just,
you know, just because you're submissive doesn't mean you're not allowed to say, I don't want to do that.
Anyway, so what I'm thinking is they're actually just confused. And my guess is they're not confused sexually. That's not what I mean. Is they're lacking some personal confidence and should probably spend some time with a therapist before they decide on what their sexual future should be.
That's a very good suggestion.
That maybe someone lacks confidence to make decisions for themselves, so they're looking for someone to make decisions for them rather than looking to uplift themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a wild guess, by the way.
I come across that I chat a lot, and I come across that in my chats where the male is completely...
Yeah, there's no self-confidence for none. Whatever
reason. They're none. They won't do anything alone.
No, for whatever reason. You know, maybe they've been rejected too much. Maybe they weren't loved enough as a child. Maybe they've been an abject failure their entire lives, you know. Or maybe they're completely successful, but they don't feel it. You know, distorted view of the world. And they need psychological help. So anyway, that is another option, because this is a very confusing combination. They want to be dominated, but not so. So, and I can get wanting your specific type of domination. That's a whole different thing. But yeah. Anyway, all right. We're moving on.
Alternative to baby oil.
Alternative for what?
In sex, and they like the texture and everything, but can't stand the smell.
Dude, go to a sex store and there's like a whole shelves full of stuff that you alternatives to baby oil. That's an easy question. Just go to a sex store. Go to an adult store.
Yes.
Yeah, there's all kinds of them. And even just go to their website. You don't even have to go to the store. They'll send it to you.
Amazon.
Amazon will deliver that thing. But you have to go to the reason you go to the adult store is so you can find out what type to buy so you can go to Amazon and order it. But here's my suggestion. The first time you buy it at the sex store, at the adult store. And then you can buy it on Amazon when you need the refills.
Yes.
Yeah. Support your local businesses.
and you might want to try a couple different products from the sex store to see which one you like best.
Yeah, they may have a sample pack and you can find out which, you know, flavors and smells and type, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. If you're into that kind of thing, those are, you know, it's like going to the candy store. Okay.
Okay. Last question. How can I unlearn my 31 female, husband, 45 male, sadistic expressions of love?
I'm a little confused.
Well, she's in a BDSM relationship. Uh-huh. They're married, have been for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
And she wants to unlearn this.
Okay, so she's... Her that part of her sex life has run its course.
Yes, apparently.
Okay. And her husband doesn't want it to?
He doesn't know yet.
Oh, well, for the love of God, woman, talk to your husband. Now, if you feel you can't, then maybe that this is fundamentally part of who he was, and that attracted you to him when he was younger, you know, when you were younger. And now, or maybe you think it is. You know, sometimes y'all both might be in a rut. And for all you know, he might want to be out too. He may be tired of the whole thing. So you got to have to talk to him one way or the other, right? Unless you're genuinely fearful. And then if you're genuinely fearful, then that's a whole nother discussion on finding a way out of a relationship. But my guess is this is just relationships evolve and it's time for your relationship to evolve. As I said, she's in her 30s now. The view we talked about earlier, how your Your sexual journey changes as you get older.
Yeah.
It's changing. So, and, you know, I think what she's thinking is she has learned that that's an expression of love. And in a sense it is, but there's other ways to express love.
Well, it isn't supposed to hurt.
Well, I mean, if you're both into that kind of thing, maybe it does. But you're right, but it doesn't have to. Right? And especially if you've moved past that. Right? If you move past it, then you've time to move past it. And you deal with that like any other, you know, issue in a relationship. But as always, you deal with it carefully. And with this, you know, I think it's time for me to unlearn to, and don't think it, and don't discuss it as sadistic expressions of love. Don't use that kind of thing because then he's going to feel attacked. Well, maybe that's not what you mean. Might be feeling that way for the last 6 months, but that's what he's used to. It's what you've always liked before. So that's what he's going to keep doing until you tell him different. Men get into patterns too.
Yeah, y'all are not mind readers.
No, we're very bad at that. We will run the script until we are told the script no longer works. Which, you know, has its good points, but it also has its bad ones. You know, habits are habits. And he may have to unlearn it too. But he may be more willing than you think, is my
yeah. Yeah, maybe yeah. Ready to move on to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. And that's it for us tonight. We want to thank you for joining us. You can find us at latenightlove.us. You can send us your own letters of love to love@latenightlove.us. And you can find us here on Saturday nights at 9 and on when I get around to uploading these things to, you know, YouTube and social media, even though we've gone live to Rumble tonight. So there's that.
All right.
So. We will talk to you guys next week. And please remember.
Would you like to know the topic?
We have a topic next week already?
Yes, we do.
Ooh, okay. What's that?
Hanukkah is coming.
Oh, that's right. It's holiday season. So we got Hanukkah. I know nothing about Hanukkah, so this should be interesting. Or I don't remember anything about Hanukkah, so this should be interesting. Anyway.
I know about a dreidel, and that's about it.
Oh, that's right. There's that dreidel, dreidel, dreidel song.
Yeah.
Actually, I do. I know what I know about Hanukkah, I learned from Northern Exposure. So that's probably not a good start. Anyway.
All right.
We are out of here tonight. Thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next week. And please remember to love everybody.
Good night.